Our second speaker is Sheikh Dr. Omar Farooq Abdullah. And he is an American Muslim who was raised a Protestant Christian in Columbus, Nebraska. And in 1969, he won a Woodrow Wilson Fellowship. An entrance to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, to pursue a PhD program in English literature. Shortly after coming to Cornell, something very important happened in Dr. Abdullah's life. He came across the autobiography of Malcolm X. And after reading it, it inspired him to embrace Islam. In early 1970, January 2nd, 1970, he taught at the universities of Windsor in Ontario, Temple, and Michigan. He's also taught Arabic in Spain and at the Department of Islamic Studies at King Abdul Aziz University in Jeddah. Since 2000, he has been working as the chair and scholar in residence at the Nawawi Foundation in Chicago. In June last year, he delivered a program entitled The Obligation of Muslims in the Provision of Good to the World. And this was presented at the court of King Muhammad VI in Morocco. Dr. Omar remains a very much sought after speaker internationally and as a scholar of Islam. Please give him a welcome.
This is what you used.
Dr. Omar, just give you a brief intro, another one. Yeah. Dr. Omar will speak address about the importance topic of chivalry and the need for it in today's society. What is chivalry in Islam's tradition and does it still exist? Dr. Omar, all yours.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallam. نوين التعلم والتعليم والتذكر والتذكير والتأدب والتأديب والنفع والانتفاع والإفادة والاستفادة والحث على التمسك بكتاب الله والسنة رسوله صلى الله عليه وسلم والدعاء إلى الهدى والدلالة على الخير ابتغاء مرضات الله ووجهه وقربه وثوابه سبحانه. اللهم افتح علينا بحكمتك وانشر علينا برحمتك يا ذا الجلال والإكرام. يا عليم علمنا من علمك ما ترضى به عنا ولا تؤاخذنا بما تعلمه منا. يا حليم خلقنا بخلق الحلم وحققنا بحقائق العلم. سبحانك لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. This last summer we had a zawiya in Spain and our topic was the male and female principles. What it means to be truly human. And we discussed this for many days, more than 10 days, and we discussed it from different points of view. We had different scholars. And we did this sort of in-house, meaning that because the issue of gender is such a provocative and maybe even explosive issue today. And we wanted to talk about it as honestly as we could, and we wanted to try to find what Islam really says about this issue. Then we felt that let's have this really sort of in-house among ourselves. And we also understood from the very beginning that we have to be extremely careful in the way that we talk about this, because of the fact that there are certain misstatements that could be made which could in fact have legal ramifications. One of the greatest speakers there, for example, is a barrister in England He's a very great man, an extremely intelligent man, but anything misspoken or possibly taken out of context could debar him. He might not be able to practice law anymore. So this issue has become highly politicized. It has become an issue of great ideological content, and so we felt we have to deal with it very carefully. One of the things that we might say is that when we look at the discussion of gender today in the world, maybe in the West more than other places, that one of the points that has to be made is that, again, without taking positions and without trying to offend anyone, but the gender talk that pertains to the so-called sexual revolution and that pertains to things like altering gender and so forth, this didn't just drop out of the sky. Okay, this is not something that just happened coincidentally. And therefore, one of the things we need to be very honest about is that ideas have genealogies. In our tradition, of course, we want to know the genealogies of the ideas that we believe in. We want to know who taught you that and who taught him or her and where does it go back to. And so also when we talk about the issue of gender today, then there are chains of, if not transmission, influence that are very important. And especially with regard to the issue of gender, you have, first of all, or maybe this is not, but first big figure is Karl Marx. This is the middle of the 19th century. And a lot of the gender talk will go back to him. And then you come forward, you have a number of other figures, but perhaps most important then is Sigmund Freud. And then going forward, you come to Wilhelm Reich. It's hard for me not to pronounce a German name in a German way. But it's Wilhelm, W-I-L-H-E-L-M. Reich is R-E-I-C-H. He is the one, in fact, who coins the expression sexual revolution. And he didn't mean that metaphorically. He believed, and this is sort of a Marxist belief, that patriarchy must be overthrown and that heterosexuality must be overthrown as well. And that ultimately all sexual taboos must be overthrown. And that that is what will lead to the classless society and the society of the greatest possible freedom. And his life is very much a story of his living that. If you look into his life, you might find that it's not necessarily a life that you would want anyone to imitate. And there's no reason to get involved in that. And then you come to Herbert Marcuse, who is another Marxist, very famous and prominent in the 1960s. And in the end, you come to Judith Butler, who is still alive. And again, we're not going to talk about that in great detail, but since the issue of gender is one of the main things we're talking about here, it's very important that when you want to talk about that, where did we get this talk in the first place? Where does it go back to? And so here you've got five people that are absolutely crucial. And we were being very careful in the way we talked about this in Rosales. And actually, we should be very careful talking about it here as well, because today when you talk, you're talking to the whole world. And whatever you say is likely to be twittered all through outer space. So And these are highly politicized, highly ideological issues. They can mean that you lose your job, that you don't get promoted. They have all sorts of consequences. But in order to speak correctly and eloquently about these things, then we have to understand that they have a genealogy. And you might want to check out these people and see what they intend and what they do. And the whole, what we use the word gender gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is an American term. I don't know if you use it in other parts of the English-speaking world. But gerrymandering is when you manipulate your political districts. You shift things around. But the gender gerrymandering, this really, a lot of this goes back to Judith Butler. And the fact that one of the greatest oppressions on earth is that you were given biological gender. This is her view. That nature is oppressive in that it made you a man and you a woman, and that you didn't have any choice in this, and therefore you existentially respond to that by deciding, well, what do you want to be? You can change your gender, you can be whatever you want to be, and that for her is an act of supreme freedom and so forth. So in any case, that's the context. And one of the things that we wanted to do is, like, how do we look at gender? And perhaps we can then come to the issue again that Imam Afroz Ali so beautifully talked about, of chivalry in this. But here we felt that let's approach this metaphysically. And again, that might be confusing to a lot of people. And metaphysics are difficult. Not everybody can relate to that. But God created the world and made gender a fundamental aspect of the cosmos. That God is the one who creates from nothing, and he creates the first perfect being. One makes one, and then you have pairs. And from the male you have the female, and you have the day and the night, and you have, you know, the different pairs that go through creation. And their gender is a big thing, the creation of the male and the female, the creation of pairs. And then you have other things, triads as well. So God makes pairs, he makes dualities, and then he has triads. Among the triads that are very important are like Malakut, Jabarut, Malakut, and Mulk, the realm of the lights before creation, if that's correct to say it that way, Al-Malakut, which is the great realm of creation, the angelic world, and the Mulk, which is this world right here. That's a triad. And we have many other triads as well. Like color. What is the triad of color?
Three basic colors.
Which are?
Oh, the pressure. I think it's red, blue, red, yellow, and
blue. You got it.
Blue.
Blue. Red, yellow, and blue. That's very impolite what I just did. But I knew she'd get it. Isn't she the best auctioneer in the world? We could have her sell these chairs and sell these. And, right, mashallah, she's really good. I enjoyed the auction so much. Also, Iman, we have to give her credit. She did a good job, too. But God creates from pairs, and the pairs are very, very important. And there is a book that you can get if you're interested in this, which is The Tao of Islam, by Mrs. Murata. You know, this is a really amazing woman. And she has a book called The Tao of Islam. She always uses Cantonese Chinese. So I've been trying to say the Tao of Islam, but she's got Tao, which is the Cantonese, right? They say Tao. And that book is profound. I'm not sure that I can recommend to all of you to read it because it's difficult. And she gives you so much information that you may find some of it very confusing, especially if you haven't read things like that before. One of the great things about Murata's book, The Tao of Islam, is the quotations. Because she has quotations from Arabic sources and from Persian sources. And she may have some others like Chinese and so forth. She knows Chinese, she knows Japanese. She is Japanese, but she knows Chinese really well. And her translations are fantastic. They're really good. And if you read it, pay attention to the translations. Sometimes she'll give you a block quote that's a whole page long, and you may not want to read it, but actually it's very worth reading. But one of the main things is what we call male principle and female principle. And these run through all creation. And they also are manifested here in the men and the women. This gender, this big deal, you know, this what some people regard today to be oppression, standing oppression. Why should you be a man? You can pick from so many possibilities, over 10 now. And then they've got even other. And if you question that, you're probably out of work at Cambridge, or at McGill, or at the University of Chicago. And you have to be very careful what you say about that in our countries. But the male principle is very, very interesting. And I'm not sure that I can make it easy for you to understand. But let's try that. One of the most important things about principles is that they are pure. They are unmixed as principles. So the male principle is that way. And it has certain qualities that are like yin and yang. And the yin and yang that you have in Chinese thought and we have in probably most Eastern thought, right? Wouldn't that be true? This is brilliant, yin and yang. Yang being the male principle, which is white, and in the symbol, and yin being the feminine, the female principle, which in the circle is black. And this is a powerful symbol, and it is a very accurate symbol. And all of you who visualize that, you know that in the yang part of the circle, which is white, there will be a black dot, which is female principle. And in the yin, which is black, there will be a white dot, which is male principle. And this is really brilliant. And basically, I would say that the way that the Chinese understood yin and yang, and the way that it's understood in, maybe in general, in Oriental traditions, if that's not too broad. In martial arts, for example, you know, it is profound. And it's something that is very similar, if not identical, to the way we also understood the male and female principles in Islam. And we have beautiful, beautiful expositions of that. How many of you have seen the movie Ip Man? Okay, so I think it's a movie that's worth watching. And again, Ip Man, who I presume that it's relatively authentic. Probably it's got some fiction in it. But Ip Man is the greatest of all. And yet, his particular art is the feminine style. And it's that femininity, that female principle, that makes him so powerful in the end. And also in the history of martial arts, and especially we have our wonderful brother here, Sensei Hakim from Indonesia, and his wonderful wife, Shinte, who are descendants of the Wali Songo, by the way. She is the descendant, forgive me for saying this in public, of Kali Jaga, who is one of the greatest of all. And this wonderful brother is the descendant of Kali Jaga's Sheikh, who is Sunan Jati, Gunung Jati, right? But, you know, so the male principle as a principle is pure, unmixed. And I don't want to describe it because some of the women might get up and walk out. Because we say, what? 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 I'm out of here. I'm not going to hear that. And the feminine principle is pure as a principle, unmixed. But they are not that way in reality. Do you follow that? That as principles, they are pure and unmixed. As manifestations in reality, they are mixed. Just as you have the black dot in the yang and you have the white dot in the yin. That's the way they manifest themselves in creation. And it's very important because the first manifestation of the male principle, maybe I shouldn't use the word first, but maybe the greatest manifestation of the male principle in reality is the Arsh, the throne of God. The throne of God, the greatest of all things that God created. And the first manifestation, again, maybe I shouldn't use that word, one of the great manifestations of the female principle in the cosmos is the footstool, the pedestal, the kursi. The kursi is not the throne. The kursi is the pedestal of the throne. And that's feminine principle. However, the throne, with regard to God, is feminine principle. The throne is male principle with regard to the pedestal. The pedestal is feminine principle with regard to the throne. But with regard to you and me and the world below, the pedestal is male principle. So they go back and forth. Are you able to follow that? And that's because wherever you will find the male principle, you will find with it the female. Water, for example. What principle is water? Male or female? So beautiful, quenching. This water here is female principle. Right? But what about the water of the waterfall? What about the water of the tidal wave? What about the water of the iceberg? See, so water also will be sometimes a manifestation of female principle and sometimes a manifestation of male principle. Water can move mountains. Water is powerful. And you have beautiful rain. One of the things I love about Nusantara is thunder. I love thunder. It's the angels, the voice of the angels glorifying their Lord. And many of the days we've been here, we've had nice rain. That's female principle. But sometimes the rain comes down really hard, and that is male principle. So they go back and forth. And if we were to look at the man and the woman, as Imam Afroz has said, you've got to have both. You've got to have both. So the man and the woman, they are as different as they can be. That's what makes them so similar. That's what makes them perfect complements. And the difference here is that in the man, let's imagine the man as a component of parts. Just imagine that. Okay, so any part you take of that man, the male principle will be outward. It will be foremost. And in that is the female principle. Whereas with the woman, if you took that same part, just to imagine it, the outward of it will be female principle. If you want, yin. And the inward will be yang. It will be male principle. Okay, and this is why the two come together so perfectly, because they complement each other in all ways. They fit together with absolute cohesion. And the woman is never a manifestation of the female principle in everything. And nor is the man ever a manifestation of the male principle in its purity. You've always got the two together. And you can always flip the coin. And that's why the man can't be a man. He can't be the kind of human being he's supposed to be unless he has the feminine aspect. He's got to have that. And that means that he's got compassion. It means that he's got empathy. It means that in his attitude towards his elders and his parents, he should be pure feminine principle. That you listen to your mother. You obey your mother. You listen to your father. You listen to your teacher. You can't be a student if you don't have feminine principle. You've got to listen. You've got to study. You've got to obey. And again, we don't like to use those terms with regard to women today because of the subordination and the subjugation of women. But these principles are not about that. These principles are about getting ourselves right. So every man has got to have female principle. And he's got to have it in the right measure, in the right place. Men are tough, right? Is our sister Hafsa here by any chance? Hafsa, is she here? Okay, but do we have any students of Hafsa? I think we do, but I'm not going to call names. But are men supposed to be tough? Never in your life. That's not a man. That's an abrasion. The man has to be able to cry. Man has to be able to feel. He's got to be able to have empathy. He's got to be able to feel pleasure, and he's got to be able to feel pain. And if he doesn't, he's not a man. When he toughens up, like, you know, pain doesn't affect me. You probably never saw the movie Lawrence of Arabia, did you? Did you? Can you raise your hands? How many watched it? My name was Lawrence. So when Lawrence of Arabia came, I skipped school. And I went to the movie theater. And I watched it all day. I was fascinated by Arabia and Lawrence of Arabia. And you remember that Lawrence of Arabia, when he takes the match and puts it to his finger, doesn't burn him. That's nonsense. He was probably that way. He was probably that way. You know, he was probably psychotic. But that doesn't make for a good husband. And that doesn't make for a good man. The Prophet ﷺ, was there a lion who was more chivalrous than he anywhere? And yet, do you think he didn't feel pain? Do you think that he didn't feel pleasure? If you don't feel pain, you don't feel pleasure. And if you don't feel pleasure, you're going to be worthless as a husband. This is one of our problems. The tough man, you know, he's really not a man. He has betrayed his feminine principle. And therefore, he's become capable, you know, of just seeing it through to the end. But that's not, he's paid a price he can never afford. Okay, so the man's got to have he's in every part of me, in every part of you, there is the male principle, female principle. It's just that because you're a man, the male principle will be always the default principle. And, oh, okay, sorry. It's okay. She got me off the hook. I got 10 minutes, and I accept that. Female principle. Okay? And, you know, but the man's got to have that. And the female has got to have the male principle. She does. She does. She is a matriarch by her nature. And this is something our beloved Imam referred to. But we need patriarchs who are fathers. That's what a patriarch is. It's a father who runs his family. But the patriarch has got to have a matriarch. You've got to have a mother who runs her family. And in healthy civilizations, this is what you have. What do you think our mother Khadija was, if not a matriarch? What do you think the blessed Aisha was, if not a matriarch, even though she was never blessed with a child? Salama, what do you think she was if she was not a matriarch? What about Nusayba or Nasiba, the warrior? She is a matriarch. And so you have to have both together. But in the woman, the default position is female principle. It is the dominant position. And she needs to be a woman. She needs to be a woman. But then in that, there is the male principle. You know, when the mother stands up for her children, that's male principle. You know, don't get in her way. You know, I've known women like that, you know, if you do anything to their children or their neighbor's children, I had an aunt, you know, that my brother got on drugs. He's a little brother. I was a relatively new Muslim. This was 1970. I was probably brand new Muslim. Might have been 1971, but I think it was 1970. And my brother got on heroin. And my mother was in Africa at that time. My father was teaching at King Abdullah. Not at King Dalama, that's my university. He was teaching at Abdullah Bayero University in Nigeria. And my mother came back for my brother. And I'm the big brother. And she knew where he was. And drugs in those days were a little bit different than now. So she knew he was in a drug house. She knew where he was. And she said, "You're going in and you're going to bring him out." And what did I say? Labayki wa sa'adayki. Whatever you say. And I walked in, and you know, I'm not going to tell you the scene, but I walked in, there was my brother in the corner. He didn't look like my brother. I walked over to him, I sat down, I said, "I'm taking you out of here, and you're coming," and he left. And they didn't do a thing. They didn't do a thing. However, and then we hid him, and he was basically not psychologically there. He was out of it. But so we hid him away. We didn't take him to our family. Then we took him to our family, and they came and surrounded our house with guns. There were about five of them. And I had an Aunt Louise. She was the most difficult woman in my life. But, you know, she did have male principle, that's for sure. And she took an automatic shotgun and she came out the front door. We had a farm. And she said, this is private property. She said, I'll give you to 10 and I start to shoot. And they got out. They ran. It's like they weren't ready for it. She said, no, I'm start 10. You know, I count to 10 and then it's war. So that's male principle. You know, and again, it's like, this is my nephew. You think you're going to give him back? And then after that, we took him out. We sent him to Africa. And it's another story. But the woman, when she raises her children, you know, you know, she can be male principle, right? And when she teaches, she's male principle. So these two go together. And this is something that we have to learn to cultivate. I think we're out of time. We're almost out of time. But I want to let us look now at, let's say a verse, because I didn't talk about chivalry, but actually our brother did more than adequately. But let's take a verse that embodies, in my mind, the perfect chivalry of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And all of the prophets were chivalrous. Futuwa is the fundamental quality of every single prophet. And again, we have Sensei Hakim, God bless him. One of the things he says is that with the youth today, young men in particular, you don't want them to be extreme, do you? You've got to give them futuwa. If you give them futuwa, they will be a service to the community. And this is the way we were traditionally, that we teach our young men and women, but especially young men, to be feta, to be a chivalrous youth, who I'll give my life for you. I will give you my money. I will give you everything. But you know, when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam is near the farewell, God reveals at the end of Surah Tawbah the beautiful farewell verses. لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَنِتُّمْ حَرِيصٌ عَلَيْكُمْ بِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ رَؤُوفٌ رَحِيمٌ. There has come to you a messenger from yourselves. What an honor. You mean I belong to the same stuff, the same humanity as this prophet? What an honor for me. He lifted me up by letting me be of what he was. There has come to you a messenger from yourself. That means he's leaving you. Abu Bakr knew that. Radiallahu anhu, he's going to leave you now. He has come to you and he's going. لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَنِتُّمْ. It is, how do we translate that? I wish I had a good translation with me. But it is عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ. How can we translate? It is very difficult for him that you meet with harm. حَرِيصٌ عَلَيْكُمْ. He is intent for your well-being. بِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ, with regard to the believers, رَؤُوفٌ رَحِيمٌ. He is kind and merciful. So who does this refer to? There has come to you a prophet from yourselves. Who is referred to here? And this is all the people that he was sent to. Even Abu Lahab, his uncle, who was the most painful story for him, betrayed by his own uncle. Even Abu Jahl. Do you think he took joy in their misguidance? No. It was Aziz Ali. It was difficult for him. And he was intent on their well-being as well as yours, everyone. So this includes everybody. And this is because the Prophet was a man. Just as Khadija was a woman, and Aisha was a woman, and Salama was a woman. And therefore, we say in our tradition, he felt the pain of all those who had pain. He wasn't like we might imagine a superman who doesn't feel anything. Now, he was the superman, but he felt everything. He felt the pain of everyone who has pain. And he felt pain for people who couldn't feel the pain because their hearts were dead. And he felt the pain of the dying heart. And he was intent, earnestly seeking their well-being to the end. So this is the magnanimity that we have to have. And really, one of the things that if we had our sister Hafsa here, or her students, but they could tell you that, you know, one of the main things when we talk about husband and wife is like, the husband has got to feel pain. And if he doesn't, he won't feel pleasure. He's got to feel sadness, or he won't feel joy. He can't be that tough man, the macho image. That's not a man. That's a machine. No man is like that. Muhammad Ali was not like that. Muhammad Ali was a man 100 times over, but he could cry. And he felt the suffering of poor people. And he had compassion for all people. Okay, and the woman's the same thing. And the woman has to be very careful too, because you don't want to be tough. You want to succeed, yes. And may you succeed at everything. And you have the male principle in you. You use that. But you've also got to feel pain. And usually women do. Women usually stay closer to their natures than men. But then also you've got to feel a pleasure as well. Joy and sadness. And the strength of the human being is when you can live with that pain and it doesn't overcome you. And you can live with that joy and it doesn't intoxicate you so that you become insane. But you've got to have it. And most people, it's like they just can't deal with that, so they shut it down. And one of the great things that we learn from great teachers like Hakim Archuleta, and I know that our sister Hafsa, she knows these things inside out. You know, one of the things we learn, you know, is the fact that we have to get in our bodies. We have to get back in ourselves. We have got to feel. One of the things that they will have you do is track sensation. You know, you say you're angry. Okay, track the sensation. What's happening in here? What's different in here? And if you can't find something, then there's nothing there. That's psychotic. That's not real. It's in the body. So, we're going to open up the floor now for you. And I hope that, you know, that we will benefit from this exchange. And I apologize again for any shortcomings in the presentation. And let's start with the questions. Bismillah. Mm-hmm.